everyone. Thanks for downloading the show. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. This is the Eclectic DIY Show with me, Eric. I have a YouTube channel in this podcast. And on the podcast, I talk with my friends about what we think are interesting things. And today I got an email from a very longtime friend, Donaldson, about compost. And I emailed her and said, do you want to be on the show? And then boom, here's Donaldson.
Thank you. Via satellite from the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts. So yes, nice to join you.
So you have a garden. I mean, basically we both have little weekend houses in addition to being in Brooklyn, and we've known each other quite a while. We both have gardens, and you had a garden question and you emailed me about compost.
Yes. So I have a vegetable garden and some flower gardens here. And I was just getting ready to pull out my pea plants because I think that they were done producing actual peas, and also some lettuce that was starting to get a little, you know, less sweet than I wanted it to be. And so I had all this green stuff and I didn't know what to do with it. And I thought you would be the guy who would know. And in the past, I've tried like some compost tumblers, you know, putting the, you know, garden things in this big black round bin that I tumble every once in a while. And I've been doing that for about a year and a half, and I've yet to actually really harvest any compost. So I'm flummoxed, and I think you're the guy to help me.
Well, this actually has some backstory because you and I used to be card-carrying members of the Park Slope Food Co-op, and my job was to be one of the managers of the composting operation in the community garden down the road, down the street, because the food co-op generated a huge amount of vegetable waste from the produce section of the store, and instead of dumping it in a dumpster and a carting company taking it away, they created a whole team of co-op members to haul it down to the garden, and then we would compost it in the garden. So it was a trial by fire for me to how to make it all work. And so I have some background in this. And the short answer is most home gardeners don't have enough mass and the right carbon to nitrogen ratio to create cooking compost, like 140, 150 degree compost that you see in the magazines or you read about online, and like, you know, oh, our compost cooks down and then we feed this brown gold to our gardens. You and I, because I know the size of your garden and it's similar to mine upstate, and we just don't generate the amount of material to create that mass. You basically need a cubic yard to start creating what's called the exothermic reaction of the little bugs that are breaking down the material. They put off heat as they eat everything. And if you don't have enough of a mass, that heat just, you don't have enough bugs, basically. And the heat they do create just kind of goes away. So when you take your pea plants down, there's not nearly enough of them to start it from the get-go. And then over the summer, unless you take all your grass clippings and your leaves and you're really, manic isn't the right word, intense about it, you're not going to get the amount of material to build a blazing hot compost pile and then take that amazing stuff and put it back in your vegetable garden. And then the tumbler gizmos are not bad. I actually think it's good. They get you to turn your compost more often, and they're usually black in color and they have holes in them. And that's good because the sun, you get some solar, basically solar radiation heating up the black plastic tub, and then it has air holes in it and you are turning it. So you're physically aerating it, and you're also physically starting to break down the fibrous material in there. So it will help you make compost in a faster time than just making a giant cubic yard pile that you have to keep turning. So I don't think they're a bad thing, but again, you have to be really on top of it. So
yeah.
I have some suggestions.
Right. Oh, great. Okay, thank you.
One of them would be what's called post-hole composting, where you either use a post hole digger or just a small, like a transplant spade, and you dig like a 6-inch or 12-inch diameter hole in the ground, like 2 feet deep. And you just throw all your food scraps from the kitchen and your waste material from the garden in that hole. And then when it's almost full, you just throw some dirt on the top. And that hole is in your vegetable garden somewhere. And so you've created a small mass of stuff. It's surrounded by soil that has the microbes that like to break down that stuff. And it slowly breaks down and enhances the nearby soil. So it's kind of like you're inoculating the soil, you're lightening the soil. And also, because you can put dirt on the top, you can keep bears are less likely to dig it up rather than, you know, tearing through your compost tumbler.
I lost you for a second. So if I do that in the vegetable garden, then after a certain amount of time, I can dig that up and put it around some of the plants, or basically you just leave it where it is and let it kind of seep into the surrounding soil.
Just leave it in the soil. It'll break down right there, and then you can plant on top of that the next year.
Oh, okay. Huh. Okay.
And then the other thing to do is my method, which is just very passive, in that I've built a giant compost bin, and I just keep adding stuff to it, and I turn it, and maybe in 5 years, I'll have enough compost to say, oh, I could put this back in the garden. So
that's the long-term plan. Keep your eyes on the prize. And what about the, you know, you hear some people talk about the green to brown ratio, which I guess is the, you know, carbon to nitrogen ratio you were talking about.
Yeah.
But should there be more brown than green, like more leaves and grass clippings than the other matter? Or how do you sort of assess that?
Well, there's some fine tuning you can do, but it's about 50-50. Some people say 60-40. Most people have the problem of they have too many browns or too many greens. Like browns would be your leaves at the end of the year. You know, you've raked them all up. Maybe you put them through your Troy Bilt chipper shredder, because they're a sponsor of Garden Fork. And you think, oh, I'm going to cook these down. But you need a ton of green material to balance out all that brown. Or people take their grass clippings from the height of summer and they put them in their compost bin, like, oh, I'm going to compost this, and you need to add a ton of brown to that. So what some people do is they stack all their browns in the fall, and then the next year when they dump grass into their bin, they have right next door they grab an equal amount of browns which have just been sitting there. And once you mix those together and add some aeration and some moisture, it can start to cook, actually.
Okay, so here's a question that may be silly. So when you're thinking about what's brown and what's green, is it literally browns? So all right. So like corn on the cob, when you're shucking your corn, that's still green unless you let it sit in the sun and become brown, and then it's brown.
Yeah, it's that simple.
Okay. Oh. Awesome. I love simple.
There is a fourth method to composting in relation to kitchen scraps. And that is, and the camera operator does not like this when I do this, but I have the coffee grounds, and I forgot to empty out the coffee grounds from the little reusable filter from the day before. So I just walk out the side porch and I fling the coffee grounds into the flower bed.
Now, do you have to be careful with it? Because I know I have lots of coffee grounds and tea leaves, but those can be pretty highly acidic, right? Do you have to worry about that, or not so much?
Not if you're cutting it with, like, I have a little plastic container in the fridge, and I take my, you know, when I'm cutting up lettuce or something, that goes in, the coffee grounds go in, the carrot stems go in, you know. So, you know, unless you're using a massive amount from Starbucks, I don't think it's a problem. And coffee grounds have a lot of nitrogen. They are a brown material, but they actually have nitrogen in them.
Okay. Great. Well, I'll start using the coffee grounds.
Yeah, so and that's a common thing where people are like, why doesn't my compost cook like it does on the guy on TV, you know? And I'm like, it's just never going to do that unless you're – really into that, so.
All righty. Well, I like the dig the hole in the vegetable garden idea. I'm definitely going to do that.
I think it's called post-hole composting. I learned about
Okay.
it from Rodale, the organic gardening magazine publisher, had a they probably still publish this book on all about composting, and I learned it there. And an even simpler method is like when I'm pulling small weeds in the garden, and I usually have wood chip mulch everywhere, I just leave them lay there. I just pull them and dump them right in the wood chips because they're small enough, they're going to shrivel and die. And they'll just add to the wood chip layer that way. So I'm not manic about everything I pull out of the garden goes into compost. The other thing to think about when you're weeding is to knock as much dirt off those roots as possible because you've spent all this time building up this great soil. And when you pull a, like a big thing of crabgrass or something, there's like 2 cups of soil connected to those roots. Just bang all the soil out and make sure that goes back into the garden, and then you can take the crabgrass and throw it into your compost. But that's I've seen a lot of people do that, and I'm like, you just took all the soil out of your garden.
Well, that brings to mind another question, because I generally don't put anything in my up till now unsuccessful composting bin, any weeds or anything that I think might have seeds that I don't want to encouraged to grow in my garden. So you don't worry, like when you put the crabgrass in your compost bin, you don't have to worry about seeds for of that.
Well, you do, yeah. If the crabgrass has a seed head and it's going brown, then the seeds are mature enough to germinate in the ideal condition. So yeah, I would avoid that. It's kind of like dandelion. You can pull dandelion and throw it in the compost with the flower on, but if it's starting to turn to the white puffy part where the seeds float off and those little fluffy things, then yeah, definitely. You can deadhead it. You could rip off the fluffy part and throw the leaves and the root into the compost. But yeah, anything that's starting to brown, I would not put a seed head in your. And there's a myth about compost. People are like, well, I can, like a squash, a rotted squash, you can throw it in there. And they're like, oh, well, the heat from the compost will kill the seeds. That rarely happens.
Okay, that's good to know. That's why I've sometimes ended up with like cantaloupe trying to grow in my vegetable garden up here in Massachusetts, which is not a very likely successful scenario. Okay, well, this is helpful. Thank you.
Do you have any more garden questions I can solve for you, or?
Oh, actually, yes. Can we change topics a little bit?
Yeah, it's Garden Fork.
My tomatoes. I'm really disappointed. They're sort of they're not growing as they're not as robust as they usually are this time of year. And I was very careful. I got a my tomatoes got a late August fungus last year, and so I didn't want to. So rather than trying to put them back in any of the soil, I was just kind of nervous about that. I actually got big pots for each of my tomato plants and just set them on top of the soil in my vegetable garden. And I was really optimistic about this, but they're not being very prolific so far. It's not, they should be, yeah, there should be, I feel like there should be more fruit on them and they should be growing a little more. So I'm baffled.
What kind of soil did you use?
Well, I used some. I got some bags from Freund's, which you know. I got some of their, some soil with like, some. I'm not going to remember the brand, but some growing stuff. And then I put some compost that a friend, brought me, like some really good commercial compost. And I also put some tomato food in there, which I've never done before, to be honest. So I'm suspicious of that. And yeah, so it should be a good soil mix with, a lot of a lot of compost and good fresh soil and well drained. I lined the pots with lots of pebbles and landscape cloth, so it should be draining well. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I'm having the same thing. I mean, it's really smart of you actually to isolate the tomatoes in big containers because a lot of soil, the funguses, and I'll just call them ailments that plague tomatoes, will overwinter in the soil. And then when it rains or the leaves drop, the bottom leaves drop and touch the soil, and then water gets involved, the microbes, the funguses can jump back on the plant. And so by isolating the tomatoes, that's really brilliant, I think. And my neighbor plants only in containers on her patio, and she is quite successful. She j does exactly what you do. I think the tomato fertilizer is key here. And she's having problems as well. And she's, what, maybe 20 miles south of you. So I don't know. We had a real cold spring. We had, it wasn't, and we've only gotten
That's true.
hot in our area in the past week or so.
That's true.
Do you, are the bottom leaves
That's true.
yellowing?
On one of them, they are. I can't remember one. It was one of those heritage tomatoes that are always a little harder to grow, I find. I think it was the Brandywine. And then I brought a couple of plants home from seedlings home from a nursery. I don't start my tomatoes by seed. That's one thing. I'm always buying seedlings. And I got it home and it had like little bumps on the stalk and I was really suspicious of it. So that one I've just kept on my deck. And that one, the leaves are starting to yellow. But yeah, one, maybe two of them in their pots in my vegetable garden are beginning to yellow. And I keep trying to, pinch those leaves off and then go wash my hands.
Well, that's not crazy at all. I mean, it's kind of applying coronavirus to tomatoes. It's not a bad thing actually. But my that same neighbor, I don't know if you ever met them, but they the husband said to me, I said, you know, when I said, you know, I put these tomatoes in, but I'm expecting the blight because every year in the middle of summer, we just call it the blight in my town. And he said, I said, should I start spraying my tomatoes? He said, you don't have to spray them until the wind starts coming from the south. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, the wind changes from the south and blows the blight up the east coast.
No kidding.
And I
Wow.
is maybe a garden expert is listening to this and could, call in. It's radio@gardenfork.tv is our email address. But that's what he said, and he's very successful with tomatoes every year. And he uses a copper-based fungicide.
Oh.
And I thought, wow, that, nature always wins anyway. So I'm like, wow, that I never really thought about that. But yeah, the maybe the blight starts in Georgia in February and just makes its way up,
Huh. Right. Because it's always so disheartening. Because early in the summer or mid in the summer in July, you have all this fruit starting to ripen on the vine, and then come August, mid to late August, and the blight sets in. It's disheartening. Gardening can be heartbreaking, Eric.
It's better than beekeeping, I'll tell you that.
Oh, I'm on my last like a half a jar of your honey, of your own honey. I'm a little sad. I'm sort of savoring it.
I might have to dip into the strategic reserve for you. Well,
Yeah,
for
that
everyone,
would
full
be.
disclosure, not only is Donaldson a longtime friend, she's also a Garden Fork patron, which is a perfect segue into my pitch for becoming a patron of Garden Fork.
Yes, for this worthy endeavor of yours. You can ask Eric pretty much anything from dogs to gardens to how to change the brakes on your truck. No, I don't know if I would ask you that, frankly.
It's on your truck, it's pretty easy, actually.
Because my truck's 25 years old.
I imagine by now you've heard me talk about the Garden Fork patrons and the pre-show and the after-show, and I thought I'd give you like 30 seconds of what that's all about. Basically, there are people that listen to the show that contribute to the continued production of the show on a monthly basis, kind of like like NPR or PBS, where you sign on for
X number of dollars a month. Like I'm a member of PBS and it's $6 a month. And for that, I get access to the older episodes of like Nova and their science and history shows and that kind of thing. With Garden Fork, if you sign on for $5 a month or more, if you have more, that would be quite nice. But if you don't, do not do that, okay? But for that, I send out just kind of the Mind of Eric kind of emails that also can show up on the app if you get the Patreon app. And also the pre-show and after-show when I record a show with other people. Because invariably, Aaron and I, or Will or Rick and I, are talking about something else after the show because we forgot to talk about it in the show. And that's sometimes fun. It's really fun to listen to Rick tell me what I'm doing wrong with the show, but in a good way, because you need feedback like that. But you could also provide that feedback becoming a patron. So that information is in the show notes of today's episode. You can also go to patreon.com/gardenfork for more information about that. All right, so think about that. And we'll go back to the show. See ya.
People have been asking about the puppy, but you have not met the puppy yet.
No, I have only seen photos. She's gorgeous.
Maybe this weekend you can come down.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to, Andy.
But it's just interesting because we haven't had a puppy in 12 years, and I kind of forgot what it's like to have this small, cute animal with piercing, sharp teeth gnawing your finger off, you know?
Right, and you forget that they know nothing. You know, like you can't open the door, they're going to run right out. You know, they're going to pee on the carpet. I mean, they do all sorts of unruly things. You forget that they know nothing.
But it's funny that, you know, I like Instagram. I kind of like that instantaneous and I could just post a picture and I don't have to write a lot. You know, some people write paragraphs on Instagram. Interaction is interesting about, you know, a picture of a plant or I'm welding something or I'm playing with words and stencils, but you put a picture of a puppy up there and it blows up the internet, you know?
As well it should. She's adorable.
So we're going to, me and Aaron from The Impatient Gardener are working on a follow-up set of videos for Troy Built, which we'll post later this week. And Andy will make her Garden Fork debut in those videos. So she'll be in there eating a stick or chewing on my hand or something. So, all right, well, Donaldson and I are going to stay on the line here and do the after show for Garden Fork patrons so Donaldson can listen to herself talking to other patrons. I think that'll be interesting. So go out and do cool stuff, everyone, and let me know what you think. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. We'll see you.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz. You can find more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. Our theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com. Other music used in the show is used under license from audioblocks.com.